finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Justice, or just a dad doing what any parent would have done. This one hits different. A father in Arkansas wakes up to find his teenage daughter missing. The man she's been, the man that she's been accusing of sexual abuse, he's out on bond, also missing. Aaron Spencer does what most parents would dream of doing, but never imagine actually doing. He finds the guy and finds his daughter in the truck with him. When he wakes up one night, she's not in the house. Where is he? He starts looking. He finds her with him. And he doesn't wait around. Puts an end to it. Now, he's the one on trial, charged with second-degree murder, facing decades in prison for stopping a man accused of 43 felonies against his daughter, a minor, his minor. The story feels clear, but the law not so much. So where is the line? What's legal? What's moral? What's prosecutable? We brought in defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis to help break this down in this conversation. We're going to get into what prosecutors were thinking when they charge this case, how the defense might justify it, and what the jury's actually going to have to consider when emotions are sky high and the public opinion is already decided. Eric, let's jump into this case. It's going on here where I'm at in the state of Arkansas. There's a lot of questions to be asked of this thing. Where do we begin? This is a father who was, you know, doing what he thought he needed to do to keep his daughter safe. From your experience as a prosecutor, walk us through what considerations the state likely weighed before actually charging Aaron Spencer, even knowing the public sympathy surrounding this case.
Yeah, Tony, I mean, one of the central questions for me is there ever a time to kill? You know, that's an issue that's been debated throughout millennia. And here we have a really poignant sort of situation where the prosecutor has to look at this and say, hey, do I have probable cause for a crime? Are there any potential defenses that could apply? And is it in the best interests of justice to move forward with this case? These prosecutors ultimately determined that, yes, it was for them.
Do they really not have a choice? I mean, I know it's easy to armchair quarterback this one on the sideline and go, yeah, he was completely justified in this. But when someone gets shot, I mean, do you always have to charge it? I mean, or is this like we have to do this no matter what, and then maybe the legal system will kind of work this out before it gets to trial? Or was this, I don't know. I mean, did it have to be charged at the end of the day? In Arkansas, I guess it comes down to what the legal threshold is for a justified shooting.
Right. It absolutely does. It also comes down to sort of the policy considerations within that prosecutor's office. And on top of that, they've got to look at, hey, is there any legitimate legal defense here? How strong is that defense? Do I still have a reasonable likelihood of conviction if I bring this case to trial? And so a lot of difficult questions with which the prosecutors were surely wrestling. There is usually not some sort of legal obligation to charge a case simply because there's enough evidence. But the modern trend, especially in situations like this, is if there's a shooting, somebody dies, there's no legal defense that is overwhelming, we're going to charge it. We're going to let a jury decide. And I imagine that's a part of the calculus the prosecutors were considering.
But isn't what happened in this case a strong enough legal defense? I mean, the guy has already been charged with SAing the daughter 43 times. He gets out on bond for whatever reason that the system allowed to happen. Not the family, the system, the court system screwing up so much that this guy is not a danger to the public. So let's let him out. He shows up at the guy's house in the middle of the night, abducts his daughter. Dad gets up, realizes it happens, chases him down, gets behind him in the truck. The guy's not pulling over. He has to ram him off the road. Gets out of the vehicle, has a weapon, thank God, because he doesn't know what he's walking into with his daughter that's being abducted in real time. And yeah, confronts the guy. The guy kind of comes at him. He kills him. How is that not justified? I can think of a more justifiable situation in life than that one right there, where killing someone is 1,000% justified. But not only that, you should be getting like unlimited chicken wings at Applebee's for the rest of your life. It should just be like, guess what? This comes along with it, sir. You get unlimited boneless buffalo wings because you did this. That's just part of what we have in our community bylaws. I don't know. I mean, it just seems like it should be. I don't know. This just seems, you know, not that complicated.
One important question you raised, Tony, is you know, could a jury nullify this? Because when a layperson hears a story like this, I think the vast majority of them are like, hey, that guy needed some killing, and that this was justified, certainly morally justified. And so the prosecutors really have to consider that, because even if there is not some ironclad legal defense, and there are some potential legal defenses to this, but even if there weren't, is a jury going to look at this and say, hey, at the end of the day, I would have done the same thing? I'm not going to brand this guy with a scarlet letter of a permanent murder conviction and condemn him for the rest of his life for what amounts to protecting his own daughter.
Because, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, that's what the state of Arkansas has to be looking at here. Excuse me, this guy's daughter assaulted, abducted, and now the state's solution is, well, let's get the big, you know, rock out of your life, the guy who's protecting you, the guy that can help guide you through this and give you what you need as best as one possibly can as you go through the rest of your formative years. Let's take him away too, because he finally killed the guy and he protected you from the guy that us, the state, failed to protect you from. Let's take him away too. This seems like a prosecutor's office that, I don't know, are they, I don't know what the hell they're doing. This just seems very, very bizarre. What do we know about the prosecutor's office? Is this, are they trying to make some sort of statement? Are they trying to be, you know, uberly liberal on the laws of the land here? Or what the hell is going on? Again, this just doesn't seem very right.
Certainly optics are involved, PR is involved, potential civil liability is involved. One thing I've seen, Tony, is over the decades, you know, back in the day, prosecutors would sometimes make bold decisions not to charge cases for which there was evidence because it wasn't in the interest of justice. Prosecutors have that prosecutorial discretion. They could have exercised that in a different way here. What I've seen more recently is prosecutors instead kind of charging the case and thereby sort of punting this really difficult decision, saying, hey, we're not going to make the final call. We'll have a jury do it. And if he's not guilty, he's not guilty. Instead of sort of taking the onus on themselves and saying, hey, I've got to make what I believe is the most just decision here prosecutorially. You know, in my personal opinion, that they didn't do that.
Would anyone have objected if the prosecutor said, we're not going to charge this? I can't imagine there's going to be like picketing around the courthouse going, I'll give the predator a chance. I just don't know. I just don't see that unless this is just really a stupid move. I mean, everybody's human in this. And people don't like to walk back things that they've already done. I mean, they did walk back the charge initially. It was originally first degree murder, which is like, how? And now it's second degree. But you also have a gag order in this case. It's been a big piece, ultimately struck down. It took the Arkansas Supreme Court to strike it down. It wasn't that the judge said, well, that may be a bit much. The Supreme Court said, you got to back this up. From a prosecutor's view, what's the logic behind trying to silence both sides on this? And does it actually help the state in this? Does it help anybody in this? I mean, at the end of the day.
You know, I think there on that issue parallels between this case and the Koberger case, in that the prosecutors in that case were abiding by a very strict gag order. And some people say, hey, that was because they wanted to preserve the defendant's rights to a fair trial. They didn't want all this outside information in the public that potential jurors could hear and form a decision on. However, other people say that the gag order was actually protecting the prosecutor's office in Koberger from what some people believed, including one of the victim's families, was a mishandling of the case. And so, you know, are prosecutors now seeking gag orders so that they can avoid sort of public scrutiny in terms of how they're handling their own cases? I think it's an important question to ask.
There's a lot of questions to ask. I want to go on this because defending this guy is going to be very interesting if it does make it to trial at some point. He's a veteran. He's a father. And now to many, an absolute hero. But here in the state of Arkansas, he's also a man now facing 40 years for murder. If you're representing him and you're defending Spencer, what would your primary legal defense be if you get out in front of that jury? Self-defense, defense of others, heat of passion? Why? I mean, what would you go with?
I think there are several options the defense can look at. So heat of passion is super strong here. You know, that's where a person has this irresistible impulse that they, because they found out some extremely troubling information and they act on it. I think that's very applicable, but it's not a complete defense. It would just lessen the class of the charge. However, there is defense of others. You know, if you thought your daughter was an imminently in harm's way of serious bodily injury, which can happen from an SA, then you can take a physical force and try to prevent that from happening. That's one defense. Another likely defense could be choice of evils, which is where there are two crimes that could be committed. One is your daughter gets SA'd upon again by the same perpetrator. The other is that, hey, if I don't stop this in a determinative fashion, that's going to happen. And so I picked the lesser of two evils there. I think all of those defenses are applicable. And I think based on the sort of moral issues in the case, a jury might be very receptive to those.
Well, and the thing is, look, the guy, the predator, picked her up in the middle of the night. He wasn't taking her out to Freddy's Frozen Custard for a hot fudge sundae. Of course he was out there to SA her again. That's the whole thing he was going to do. And God knows, maybe even kill her. Because that would shut her up. He's already facing these charges. The 43, he's out on bond. If you get the star witness gone, the victim, that seems like it might be a little motive to pick her up in the middle of the night. Arkansas law allows lethal force to prevent kidnapping or sexual assault. That's a statute. I'm not quite sure how it doesn't apply here or why the prosecutor's office doesn't think it applies here. I mean, the child, what, just because she wasn't actively being essayed at that moment in time, that isn't applicable? I mean, she was being kidnapped actively. Essay was next on the list. Thank God dad found him, her.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you. And I'm wondering if the prosecutors at this juncture, the case has been filed, they're not going to go back on that. But I'm wondering if they would consider extending some kind of very lenient plea offer, like something like a year in jail or even less potentially, to sort of save face and communicate to the community that, hey, you know, you can't be a vigilante, you can't take the law into your own hands, but this case has some very serious extenuating circumstances, and this is how we're going to handle it. You know, at this juncture, that's what I'd love to see them do. Will they have the cojones to do that? We got to wait and see.
Yeah. Is it cojones or is it lack thereof, I guess, is the question of doing the right thing and not wanting to be wrong. Because, again, that's like they file the charges. They're not going to, I mean, they could the DA at this point, could they withdraw charges if they really wanted to? If they took a closer look at this, they got the public pressure, they got the scrutiny, they got their phone calls, they can't stop ringing and everybody's just going, what the hell are you doing? Could they say, we're going to drop this?
Certainly they could. You know, that happens not uncommonly, mm-hmm. even as you're getting close to trial, because the DA is getting more information as the case is proceeding. There's investigations that are ongoing. They could say, hey, look, after looking into this further, we actually don't believe there's a reasonable likelihood of conviction at trial, and we're going to dismiss. That's not uncommon. It happens in homicide cases, and certainly an option the prosecutors have.
So in a case like this, is this where like just more public pressure needs to build? I mean, we're starting to see it get out there. We're talking about it now. A lot of others are starting to talk about it now. Is this where, okay, time to put the public pressure on and let's start making voices known in front of that courthouse, at that courthouse, to that courthouse, email calls, everything and anything to go, look, this is a really stupid move. Just back it up, be the hero here. And you're not going to be looked at with hate. And it's not about being looked at with hate. It's doing the wrong thing. This does not feel like something you should be able to prosecute at all. Does it come down? Is the reason that they're going after him more so because of the amount of shots that were taken here? I mean, he emptied his clip into the guy. I would do the same thing. And then he allegedly pistol whipped him as well. I would do the same thing. The guy would be found in parts along different places of Arkansas, Missouri, and surrounding states, I think, if it were my child. But that's not what happened. He did empty it. I get it. Is that the real thing? It's like you went too far. If you just did like one or two shots and took him out, eh. But you emptied and you reloaded. Is that where it gets a little tricky?
I think that's a part of it. So when we're talking about self-defense, the physical force that a person utilizes has to be proportional to the threat and only to the degree necessary to stop the threat. And so if you go into some overkill mode, there's a higher likelihood that you're going to be charged. On top of that, prosecutors could say something like, hey, this guy could have called 911. He had options that were options other than just unloading his clip in this guy. So I think that was probably a factor in the prosecutor's decision to ultimately bring the case.
I would think, I mean, another factor here in the defense of the father in this would certainly be somewhat of a PTSD defense as well. Obviously, the essay occurred to the daughter, but that's going to be a traumatic stress on any parent as well. That's having to try and navigate a scenario where your child experienced this. How do you help them through that? What do you do? There's no booklet for that. So knowing this guy's free, and then daughter's not in her room, and you discover, oh, holy shit, he's actually with her. He came and got her. That's a big deal. That would be very triggering. And if you already have PTSD, which I think one would have as a parent, from having this happen to your child, the most important thing to you in the world. Yeah, that's a triggering event. That would be something that would certainly make, go to more of an extreme. Had this been the first time it happened, maybe it wouldn't have gone that far. I don't know, but there certainly was precedent here to know what this man's intent was with his daughter.
Certainly, and I think there are mental health avenues the defense should 100% explore. Now, this concept of like temporary insanity, that's really not a thing in most jurisdictions. However, there is not guilty by reason of insanity, which requires a mental disease or defect, which usually means any kind of legitimate psychological condition that stopped the person from being able to make an intelligible, rational choice in the moment. You know, is there room to say, hey, the PTSD was so strong when we're talking about this gentleman's 14-year-old daughter and all the circumstances you mentioned that he literally could not control himself at that point. Evolution kicks in, instinct kicks in, and he had no voluntary control of his own faculties. I think it's something that the defense should at least explore and could have some effect on the prosecutors and how they view the case.
Do we know how this all initially started, how the 43 charges first came to be? How did he start communicating with her? Like, what was the genesis of this case?
You know, Tony, as you mentioned, that there is sort of limited public information about this case. But what appears clear is that, you know, there was this grown man and this 14-year-old, communications started to happen. And then, you know, after that, he's charged with 43 crimes, much of which relates to essaying a 14-year-old girl. Yeah. And then, like you said, he gets bond, which is kind of perplexing in a case like this. He's out. They can't find him. They can't find the 14-year-old girl. Oh, it turns out they're together again, likely communicating to kind of arrange that. And so this was an ongoing campaign, allegedly, by this sexual predator on a 14-year-old that culminated in his death.
If this goes to court, I'm going to guess her testimony would be the most powerful here. If she confirms that this monster, Fossler, grabbed her and wouldn't let her go, essentially kidnapping her, which is what it seemed to be, would that make or break this case in terms of a jury finding innocence or guilt on Dad stepping in and saving her life?
Talk about, you know, like reaching into the chest cavity of these jurors with testimony. That would be undeniable. I don't see how a normal human being wouldn't, you know, likely be in tears, so moved by the degree of trauma that this young girl allegedly experienced. And it just goes to show, you know, if that's what was happening to the daughter, what's going on in the dad's mind? And especially if they get a good number of parents, including dads, on that jury, they're going to watch that. They're going to envision their own children. And they're probably going to think to themselves, gosh, what would I have done? And if the answer is the same thing as defendant did, I think defendant's got a good shot at trial.
Without a doubt. Eric Faddis, defense attorney, former prosecutor, as always, thank you so much for your insight and being in the courtroom on this one. Really invaluable and such a fascinating case. Thank you as always.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.